Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
The Taoiseach will address the nation again at 6pm this evening, but Oliver Callan has a preview with a little help from the Tánaiste.
Adini Ushla, we will be reopening outdoor hospitality on June 7th, Bank Holiday Monday, a night people traditionally have the fear with the prospect of work the next day, so there's little danger of you going completely langers.
Even old people are usually bloomed to within an inch of their life by the June Bank Holiday. It's as dead as a disco for show.
In July, we will take the next step to returning to normal.
And by normal, we mean different rules for different people.
Hotels are being prioritised over pubs and restaurants with no overnight guests.
Cool.
It's because Fine Gael turned Dublin into a giant hotels resort with no homes, so that's not my fault.
It was either that or thousands of pub flats, and I can't go for an 18 euro mojito in a pub flat before a Kylie concert, like hello.
We are hopeful that some sort of unclear indoor dining will be available from some non-specified time in July. There will be no live music permitted,
no,
so as to stop Monday singing that annoying song about July. Minister Donnelly and Paul Reid of the HSE will address the latest vaccine shambles in a lesser press conference later.
Paul Reid might be small, but he earns more than us co-teachers put together. And somehow the Gardaí are investigating leaks. I mean, really.
But let's be on a Cuaramach or Fad.
What?
The virus can still be spread through the very air from which we plucked figures like 105 minutes.
Oh.
It can lose the run of itself, and so can ye. We will reopen. We will endure. But we're not there yet.
No.
A lot done. More to do.
Let's keep the recovery going. And remember, you can do a lot in 105 minutes.
Sure, some of Fianna Fáil's best agriculture ministers only lasted that long.
Oh, nice. See you all in Casa Bacardi. Mine's a mojito.
I'll have a glass of milk in a boiled egg.
Oh, ruined it.
And you can hear the full Callan's Kicks this evening right after drive time on RT Radio 1, or you can download it from rte.ie/podcast. Coming up after the break, The Gathering.
Today with Claire Byrne. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Pure power, bold style and unadulterated road presence. The all-new Opel Mokka.
The all-new Hyundai Tucson is Ireland's best-selling car this year. And it's also got the Irish motoring press talking. The Irish Times, right? Hyundai has a hit on its hands. The Irish Independent says, a daring revamp that pushes the boundaries. The Sunday Independent, right? It's a massive step forward. And the Sunday World say, the new Hyundai Tucson is absolutely amazing. The all-new Tucson, Ireland's best-selling car. Now available in diesel, hybrid and plug-in hybrid. Visit your local Hyundai dealer today. Best-selling car this year as based on most recently published monthly figures.
When you get enough people together, you can achieve almost anything. Send someone like me into space or create change on the ground. People power, strength in numbers, whatever you want to call it, it works.
Together with over 1 million homes and businesses already with Electric Ireland, we're making changes for a brighter energy future. Be part of the change at electricireland.ie.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Time now for our weekly gathering. We're going to discuss some of the big stories of the week. Joining us in the studio, we have Matt Carthy, Sinn Féin TD for Cavan Monaghan, Alison O'Connor, columnist with the Irish Examiner. And joining us from our Limerick studio is Patrick O'Donovan, Minister of State at the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform, and Fine Gael TD for Limerick County. And you're all very welcome. Thanks for being with us. Let's talk about reopening first. Minister, I'm going to come to you in Limerick because Leo Varadkar warned your own parliamentary party about this fourth wave this week, but he was facing calls when he did so from your own colleagues to further ease restrictions. Some of the TDs reportedly saying that the rules around reopening hotels before pubs were indefensible. I'm just wondering how you feel about the pace of reopening, because we do only have 1 in 8 people fully vaccinated when this happens.
Yeah, well, I think he also said, and he said it this morning as well, that we will have about half of the adult population vaccinated, and the vaccine programme is going well. So he laid out this morning, and he also laid out at the Fine Gael parliamentary party, that we are having about 1.2 million people being vaccinated per month. So every week that goes, we're getting about 300,000 people vaccinated. So, you know, the importance is that obviously, look, people are being frustrated. I'm very frustrated that we are in a situation where we'd like to see things run faster. But the reality is that every day there's about 50, 60,000 people more being vaccinated. That has to be viewed as a good thing.
So you're okay with the pace, are you?
Well, no, I mean, I'd love to see a situation, Claire, where we're open, but I'm also a realist and a pragmatist that there continues to be a risk, but every day that risk has been reduced. I mean, mm-hmm. every time there's a needle put into somebody's arm is a reduced risk. And you know, I'm conscious of the fact of what the Taoiseach said at the party meeting the other night. I also accept what he said this morning on Morning Ireland, you know, that the vaccine rollout is gathering pace, and that the schedule that the government is going to lay out today isn't going to be derailed because of the vaccine rollout being, you know, I suppose taken a step sideways by the Janssen.
The delivery on the Janssen.
So look, I mean, we are in a very positive place. I don't think this time last year, if anybody had said that we would be where we are now, this is a very good place where we're going to be today. We're going to have a schedule today that will take us from the 2nd of June to the 7th of June and on to the 2nd of August, where we're really going to see, I think, over the summer being ramped up, where it'll start in an outdoor setting, but we're going to see significant outdoor and indoor events being brought back, and people's lives, I think, being given a massive positive injection, which is what people want to see.
Unless you're a musician, that's who we're hearing from there at the top of the hour. Deep upset there that they're not going to be allowed to do their work. Matt, I just want to talk to you about the hotels being allowed to open on the 2nd, and then the restaurants up in arms threatening legal action over the situation therein. They're only allowed to do outdoor from the 7th and then not indoor until the 5th of July. Do they have a case there, do you think? Do they have a point?
I think so, yeah. I think one of the difficulties has been throughout this process is that the communications have sometimes gone awry. So today is a positive day. The last 5 months have been really hard for many people. And the one point I would disagree with Patrick on, I don't think anybody 12 months ago would have thought that today we'd be essentially repeating the easing of restrictions that were done last summer. So I think it is important that when there are anomalies, and this is clearly an anomaly in relation to the fact that you can have a restaurant that can only serve outside next door to a hotel which can serve food inside. And that's an anomaly. When that happens, there needs to be a very clear explanation as to why that is the case and the public health advice that underlines it, because I think most people would recognise that just doesn't make sense.
I was surprised to see your colleague Darren O'Rourke calling yesterday for there to be an indication around international travel so that people can plan, because yours is the party that wanted everybody put into mandatory hotel quarantine not so long ago.
Well, what we have always wanted is the measures to be put in place that would allow society to be to operate as freely as possible. So the reason that we have always wanted to have proper and safe restrictions in relation to international travel, the reason why we wanted to have a robust and strong testing and tracing regime, the reason we wanted controls on those sectors that were particularly dangerous, like the meat processing sector, was precisely because we wanted people to be able to get on with their lives in so far as is possible. Everything that we have advocated has been based on what the public health advice has been. So what we want is a clear framework from the public health advisors as to how we can actually reopen international travel.
So whatever Neffet says, you're going to go with that.
I'm not saying that everything should be accepted without question. Absolutely, there needs to be a basis for that, and there needs to be an examination of the basis that's provided by Neffet. But what we want more than anything is for people to be able to get back to their lives, get back to work, to be able to socialise, meet up with their friends and families in a safe manner. And clearly, the rollout of the vaccinations has changed the dynamic in which we're working within.
Yeah. Alison, how do you feel about the pace? Because we know that, and Minister Patrick O'Donovan referred to it there, disappointment on the Johnson & Johnson front in terms of vaccines. We're not going to hit 82% as planned in June. Does the reopening, do you think, tally with where we're at with vaccines?
I think it does largely, and I think that we have, you know, certainly over the last couple of months taken a cautious approach, and I think, you know, that is continuing. But that's not to say, to make it sound like it isn't a reason to be very happy. It is. I do understand the absolute frustration of restaurant owners, but if all along this has been about balancing risk, and over other occasions there's times where it seemed as if there wasn't a logic in place. There's obviously far, far more restaurants in the country than there are hotel restaurants, if you like. So that is lowering, you know, automatically.
Movement of people.
A movement of people. Automatically, that is a different level of risk. I think that it was very disappointing yesterday. I mean, I'm vaccinated. I was vaccinated last Saturday with the Janssen vaccine. So I will
be... one and done.
So I will be vaccinated next Saturday. And I find that very hard to take on board, I'll be honest with you. It just seems... And I was discussing it with a friend who's the same age as me yesterday. We were saying it's very strange, even the fact that my husband will be getting Pfizer. So even that we'll be on a different schedule, if you know what I mean. And you're looking around you now and you are looking at younger people and thinking, you know, that they're not vaccinated yet. Or if you're asking me what I think of the delay, or if I was a healthcare worker getting a second shot of AstraZeneca next week, I feel I'm compromised by the fact that I've got my vaccine. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. very
changes
different.
Your outlook.
It changes your outlook, and you're it's a very privileged position. And obviously to get the Janssen is a very privileged position. Although I will say, the one thing I'll say about the Janssen was there is so little of it in circulation here in the UK. So even last weekend, you see stuff like about the Indian variant against AstraZeneca, Pfizer. I don't see much study of Janssen because there just aren't many. There aren't that many of us around. But having said all of that, I'm utterly thrilled to have it. And I think that this is the way of vaccines. We've learned that very painful lesson. Supply goes up, supply goes down. It's not to say that things won't change over the next couple of weeks. And I think that, I mean, there was stuff yesterday came out from Pete Lunn in the ESRI where he was saying that even when restaurants do reopen, they don't see as a result of their research, people rushing back in while you still have numbers at like 400 or so cases.
I don't know about that. You know, I mean, I know what I saw at Christmas time going out for a meal during the day with children and people were... Yeah. Settling in, I mean.
I know, but I mean, I guess we did learn quite a lesson then, didn't we? And I mean, maybe I'm just a terrible scaredy cat, and maybe it's my age. But even the fact that I will be vaccinated, I don't think I will be rushing back indoors. I find it hard to imagine myself in that sort of a scenario. And I guess part of that's a whole other separate thing as to the psychological hangover of the last 14 months or so, you know. It's great. Hopefully the bloody weather will improve. You know, we're greatly helped by the fact that we're coming into the summer.
Patrick O'Donovan can't do anything about that, but I do want to talk to you about the PUP because we had the owner of a chain of hairdressing salons on the front of the Irish Times. He was on this programme earlier on talking about not being able to get staff because of the PUP and the shadow economy, as he called it, and he offered someone 5 days a week and they said, no, I can make that in 2 days at home.
Yeah, look, I mean, this is, there's no denying it, it is a problem, and it has been, I think anybody that is in touch with their constituents will, and particularly small businesses, this is a problem and has been articulated to TDs around the country. And I know that on Monday, the government will be laying out, from an economic point of view, the continuation of the supports. But we've been very...
But like a roadmap to bring them to an end?
Well, a roadmap in terms of not bringing them to an end per se, but a roadmap in terms of how they're going to be structured going forward. We've been very clear that at every turn of the pandemic, we've been very conscious of the fact that...
What does that mean? Does that mean they're going to be reduced further?
No, it doesn't mean, that they're going to be reduced further. It means that since this pandemic started, Ireland has been one of the countries across the European Union that has taken the lead, actually, in terms of the economic supports that have been available to businesses and individuals and families. But when you have businesses, and they're in my constituency and they're in Cavan Monaghan as well, where we can't get people that are in small businesses that are prepared to take up jobs, this is a real problem.
Are you hearing that, McCarthy, as well?
I have to say it's fairly limited. There is a mechanism within the Department of Social Protection whereby employers can contact the social welfare to inform them that they have staff that are refusing to return back to work. And I know that that has worked effectively in the few cases where it's there. The more prevalent issue I'm hearing from people who are on the PUP is concern in terms of their own financial stability, both in terms of the protections that are there. Remember, everybody who's on the PUP was working prior to the pandemic hitting. So these aren't people that can be attributed as being afraid of working or anything like that.
And there's
the biggest
people
concern,
who can't
I have
work.
To say, are for those people.
We had a taxi driver get in touch with us who works out of the airport. Now, he was saying the PUP ends, I still can't work. I don't.
Exactly.
They're not
and people,
people
like
there.
That need to have the insurance. And there's also
and
this is a
like
really good,
chair,
sorry, Patrick, just
people,
let me finish.
No, but for, it's important because you know I didn't finish the point because for people like that, and Michael McGrath said it as well last night on Primetime, the government have been very clear from the start that there will be no cliff edges.
Okay.
And at every stage in the pandemic, we've been very
but there's
clear.
Also there's also an important point to be made. Like this week, we're realising again that even within the rent pressure zones, people could now be faced with an 8% hike in their rents if that's what their landlords so decide. We also know that energy prices have been increased again this week. So there's lots of people who are in precarious, low-paid employment who not only are facing all of the additional costs that are going to come with childcare and everything else of going back to work, but they're also mm-hmm. facing potentially additional costs and charges and carbon tax hikes and all the rest of it. So all of these things need to be taken in the round, and what we need to ensure is that people, that everybody benefits from the optimism and the positivity of society reopening.
The Department of Social Protection says now that 150,000 people came off the PUP this week.
Yeah, I mean, this was an issue. I got my hair appointment after lockdown was with a new hairdresser near to me who opened at Christmas. And she told me at Christmas time she wanted to get somebody else in, couldn't find anybody. And again, last week, there's a barber next door to her. He's fine. They're both working single-handed, basically. They cannot find people. And certainly in the case of the hairdressers, with what the owner of the Longbridge mm-hmm. you had on earlier, what's being made in the black market. Now, of course, as Matt says, there's a hell of a lot of people out there, or like you mentioned, the taxi driver. But what I wonder about, I mean, if where I spent my summer last year down the southwest where I'm from in West Cork, it was absolutely ripping with business. There was, you know, and all the way up along the West Coast. It will be, and we can anticipate, even though there will be foreign travel as it's being announced, that it's going to be another incredibly busy summer, very high demand. It's going to be a real issue for people in those sort of businesses if they cannot get staff to go back to work.
But there's an awareness of it. That's what Patrick O'Donovan is telling us.
There is clear, and as well as that, it is important to point out that the vast majority of employers are gearing up. The vast majority of employers are getting people to go back to work. So, you know, I have seen it even in my own constituency, in towns across my own area where businesses are reopening, they have reopened seamlessly. So the issues that are being highlighted are for the majority, a minority.
Most people want to go back to work.
They do.
You know, that's the bottom line.
Most people do. And you're always going to have this as an issue where there will be people who won't want to, but they are a minority. And there are officials in the Department of Social Welfare who are there to deal with this, and they will deal with it.
I want to, you touched on housing there because you mentioned the potential rent increases. People might be facing 8% because there was a delay on the annual rent increase last year with the freeze. But the development of homes in Donabate in North County Dublin, this was 1,200 new homes in Fingal, Matt. This went through the council without the support of Sinn Féin. So what's going on there? Like, if Sinn Féin disagrees, as we were told, with the price of private homes, so we're going to be around 270,000, then no one can have homes.
No, 60% of the houses that will be built on this site, which was essentially a sweetheart deal to a private developer who received the sites at half the market rate, will be sold on the market for over 400,000. That's not affordable to the vast majority of people. We want public land to be used for the development of public houses, and we make no apologies for that because we believe that this type of deal is actually the source of the housing crisis that we're in at the minute. It was the outsourcing and privatisation of the public responsibility to deliver housing that actually led in large part to the crisis that so many of our citizens are going through at the moment. And we can see, looking at O'Devany Gardens, look at the report today. This was again a deal that Sinn Féin and others warned about, in which the sites were actually sold off for nothing, handed over to a private developer under huge promise. And we find out that a huge proportion of those homes that are built will actually land into the hands of cuckoo funds. So I think it's a really important. Nobody is stopping private developers developing on private land. In fact, we encourage it. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the limited supply of public land that we have, that needs to be used to try and exert the maximum public benefit.
So
and that
means
providing affordable homes that ordinary workers and families can buy.
The point that Rebecca Moynihan, the Labour Party spokesperson, made on Late Debate this week was that this isn't perfect. It's not ideal, but it gets houses built. And in a housing crisis, that's what we need to have happen.
Well, the houses at the Donabate site will be delivered over the course of 10 years. So that's not necessarily pointing to a crisis proposition. So the proposal went through. As I say, I think personally it's a bad deal. I've seen it in my own constituency. If you just let me finish this point, I've seen it in my own constituency while I was on Monaghan County Council, where land, public land, was sold to a private developer. The private developer built the houses and then ended up in trouble with during the economic crash. That land was then, them houses were then bought back by a housing agency. So the public paid twice. We sold off the land below value. We bought the houses
Patrick
above
O'Donovan,
value.
What you want
that's
to say
the type
there?
Of mechanism that actually has caused the crisis that we're
find,
in.
I find, and I was a councillor myself for long enough to know, that the Donabate situation and is absolutely bizarre, that Sinn Féin would have voted against 1,200 houses and 20% of them going to social housing and another 20% of them going to affordable. So ordinary families, young children in the Donabate part of Dublin with guaranteed prices of between 250 and 270,000. So that's close to 500 houses being made available to those that are currently being excluded.
But the 60% at 400,000, that's what they had the problem with.
So like when push came to shove, this is not by any manner of means a small council. This is a huge council, 31 votes to 9. They were found out. And at the end of the day, when they were found out, they scurried away. And they've been, since then, they have been digging. One thing, when you're in a hole, you should lay down the shovel. But they have been digging it even deeper to try and create a smoke screen out there in that part of County Dublin. And the reality is that... What I'm saying that they're at is that regardless of who's putting forward a proposal in whatever local authority or whatever approved housing body or whatever minister is bringing forward a suggestion, they're going to vote it down.
We're going to vote down sweetheart deals.
They're voting down every deal everywhere because no matter who's putting forward a proposal, unless it's a Sinn Féin proposal, they're voting it down.
But
this time round, they got caught out. And the people out in Donabate now know what they're at. It's opposition for opposition's sake. And they got caught out. And it's
all
the
right,
very
let Matt respond to that now, because that's a serious accusation that they're hampering developments for political reasons.
Hold on a second, Claire. He had a good run at it.
Well, you had a good run yourself.
They also got caught out on the mandatory hotel quarantine. And Louise O'Reilly got cut out in it because she wanted, and their spokesperson on transport wanted, everybody locked out of the Irish state. Quote, she said, "The government are not enforcing mandatory quarantine on all arrivals, and I think that needs to be done." Mm-hmm. In other words, keep everybody out of Ireland.
All right,
and what has happened? The aviation sector has practically collapsed.
Let the man
and now
respond
they've
to
done
all that.
A 180 degree U-turn.
Okay.
Well, that's Sinn Féin for you.
I've actually outlined where
you
our position
you've outlined
was.
Outlined it all right.
Okay, Patrick, you're going to let me finish. We have outlined where we stand on mandatory hotel quarantine in relation to housing, because I believe firmly that this is the crisis of our time. I believe this is a crisis that's in the making for a number of decades. And the reason it's in the making for a number of decades is because at one point, governments decided that rather than building affordable and what used to be called council housing, that they were going to outsource that, with the net result that every year we are spending increasingly hundreds of millions of euro subsidising private landlords for the delivery of social housing, rather than actually receiving an income, as local authorities did for successive generations. And the deal that was done in Donabate, and absolutely, listen, the vote went through, so we'll see the outworking and we'll see how quickly those houses
and
are delivered.
And we'll see houses.
We'll see the cost of that over time.
Absolutely, but we'll see it.
In my view, we would have saw a much better return if we did Donabate what local authorities and what governments did for generations, which is actually build public and affordable houses for those people who need it in the here and now. Houses being sold at over 400,000 euros, many of it will end up in the hands of private speculators and landlords and all the rest of it. That isn't the type of housing policy that I think should be tied to
public
land.
And you know that, and I know that. We would have seen nothing of it.
Well, Patrick, can I just say this? You've been in government for the past 10 years. I think it's actually quite ludicrous that you're trying to suggest that it's somehow the opposition's fault that we're in the housing crisis that you created.
You've been found out in Donabate. You know that and I know that.
Alison.
Yeah, I think Punch and Judy here and the sort of over and back, people are exhausted from that on housing, and I think get confused. It's difficult to know who's right and who's wrong, and has been said so many times previously. You have to wait years to know in terms of physical houses being built. The government ships enormous damage in housing, as we've seen over the last couple of weeks. Sinn Féin is in a strong position. However, the charge that Patrick just put against Sinn Féin, attempting to block development, is a potent political charge. And I suppose it's one of the few weaknesses that they can find in Sinn Féin's armour, if you like, on this issue. And if it happens again, I suppose people will start to take it on board. Is this something that's happening that Sinn Féin are trying to block housing? I would be inclined to take what Rebecca Moynihan, who you quoted earlier, the senator, has to say, that in this instance, perfection is the enemy of the good. We just need houses. And while you might want it to work
you
out...
You don't accept that argument.
Yeah, I mean, the same argument Identity Gardens. Now we're looking that a huge proportion of that is going to end up in the hands of investment funds.
Yeah, but
the very
you,
thing that caused
yeah,
such
but that's, well,
the
no, but that's not the case. And that's not the case in Donabate. And I suppose you could say, certainly, look, I used to live near Identity Gardens. It absolutely symbolises everything that is wrong with what's been going on
but
with our housing policy.
We face the same criticisms when Sinn Féin councillors voted against that development.
Yeah, but we already knew that, if you like, it's not a new charge on the apartments. But I think that, there are certain people who believe Sinn Féin cannot do any wrong on housing and believe the government can't do any right. So, I mean, those people won't be persuaded. But certainly the government is hoping that there are going to be, you know, people in the middle who can be swayed, and that this, as I said earlier, there isn't much they can throw at Sinn Féin in this. So we're going to hear a lot.
Listen, I have 2 minutes left and I want to get to this point about Edwin Poots, Patrick O'Donovan, and what he said about the Taoiseach and the Minister for Foreign Affairs. I'm able to work with, I might be able to work with on Taoiseach Micheál Martin, he said, but he was really caustic in his criticisms of Leo Varadkar and Simon Coveney, saying they took photographs of blown up border posts to impose upon Northern Ireland people a harsh form of customs and an internal market that doesn't exist anywhere in the world. Where is that going to go?
Well, look, I mean, the leader of Fine Gael and the deputy leader of Fine Gael will work with everybody in Northern Ireland.
I don't know how you'll work with him after that.
We will, and we'll work with everybody, and we've always worked with everybody, and the Taoiseach and the Minister for Foreign Affairs are committed to working with everybody. And look, we wish Edwin Poots well. He's the leader of the DUP, and they are an important voice, and they're the lead unionist party, and we wish him well. And he has an important role to play now. Mm-hmm. And there are elections coming up. And I know that he was speaking to and appealing to a base in the immediate aftermath of winning an election.
Okay.
He's won his election and we now move forward.
Really quick word, Matt, on that. Is that what he was doing, speaking to his own?
Yeah, I think it's important to understand the context. The DUP always try to resist change. What Edwin Poots represents is a portion of the DUP that wants to reverse the change that has already happened. He's on a hiding to nothing, because what the DUP will learn and what Edwin Poots will learn is that the only way that power can be exerted in the North is in partnership with all the other parties and with the two governments.
All right, we're out of time. Got to leave it there. Matt Carthy, Patrick O'Donovan, Alison O'Connor, thank you all very much indeed.